We're talking careers and money. Two very important things that can make or break your life. We've got a special guest who is in HR today. So let's have a bit of a chat. Might even keep that one.
Happy with that?
Very happy with that intro, John.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know, sometimes we have to redo them, but anyway. We've got Emily Bowen. Hey, Emily. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
Welcome,
how are
Emily.
You? Thank you.
So Emily is... Sorry, what is your title? Is it HR consultant?
Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, look, my title is manager, which is reasonably nondescript. So what I look after is a few different niche areas of specialization at Forsyth Recruitment and HR. So we're a consultancy.
Sweet. I don't even have to re-edit that and ask you again because I think we salvaged that.
Beautiful.
But shout out, hey, if this is your first ever episode, thanks for joining us. Thanks for checking us out. And make yourself at home. Take your pants off. Unzip your fly and I don't know.
This is a career episode.
This is a career. Anyway, best behavior, everyone. John,
yes,
you're on your best behavior
absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you get the sack.
But welcome if this is your first episode. It's great to have you here checking out our podcast. We will try and be on our best behavior. We'll try and make it clear, concise, and to the point. So, Emily, I put it up on Instagram. I've got some questions. Don't want to put you on the spot too much.
Little bit though.
John's probably going to make some stuff up. We're going to talk about how to get the dream job, how to change to the dream job, how to get your first job out of uni.
Yep.
How to write the best resume, how to make sure that you're not crazy and the grass is going to be greener.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. Let's have a chat about your career and your money right now.
You're listening to My Millennial Money. Glenn helped me dig myself out of financial debt. Now my only debt is towards this podcast, where I'm forced to provide you with all these voiceovers without financial compensation. Forever.
Real talk. Got my barbecue grill over here.
Yeah,
got the grill out.
See it.
Yeah. What are the benefits of going to a recruiter for the job seeker?
Okay. It's an interesting question, and I think a lot of people, perhaps particularly early in their career, may not have even heard of a recruiter, may not have a clue what they do, or may have a misunderstanding. So I guess one of the things that I just want to point out up front is I'm not going to be talking today, or when I'm talking about recruitment agencies or recruitment consultancies, not talking about what you might hear called a job network provider. So I think that's a really important distinction to make.
They're kind of like community service things, aren't
they? Yeah, yep. So government funded.
Yes.
And so typically if you're working with Centrelink or you've been long-term or longer-term unemployed, they're a service that the government provides through funding organisations.
Perfect. So today we're a free market podcast. It's not a socialist society. Is that what we're saying?
I think that's what we're saying.
Okay.
So... recruitment consultancies can be really, really valuable as one piece of the puzzle. And so that's another point that you'll hear me echo in basically everything I talk about and all sort of the insights that I have. You want to use them as one tool in your toolkit. So yes, absolutely go and talk to a recruitment consultancy, but don't think that they're there to get you a job, because the other distinction I think it's important to make is that it's not going to cost you anything, but actually they're at the service of the client being the company. So it's the company or the organisation that's employing people that's paying their bills. And so first and foremost, that's where their priority lies.
So in our world, is it the equivalent of a mortgage broker?
I would say no.
Okay.
Not quite.
Good to clarify that.
So I guess the difference is I'm really mindful that often when I hear you guys describe what a mortgage broker does and the service, they're at the service of the individual person who's looking for a home loan. And I'm really talking in layman's terms here, I guess. And they're being paid a commission, obviously, depending on the product from the bank. The difference is that we are paid a fee from the employer company, and our job is to go and find them the right employee. So we absolutely want the best for the candidates that we're considering. And the reason we want the best is because then it means we can get the best person for that employer. But at the end of the day, if we're being a little bit cutthroat for the sake of simplicity in this conversation, our client is the employer. That's yeah. who's paying our bills.
Yeah, sure.
But the thing, if I open the hood on recruiters, it might. So if John, you've got a big company, you might pay a recruiter $20,000 to find you the best talent for your job, and it might be a $120,000 role, right?
Yeah.
And you might pay the recruiter $20,000. Now, some recruiting agencies, and we're not speaking on behalf of Forsyth's recruitment and HR here, but if that candidate quits or leaves within the first three or whatever period is, they're entitled to a fee refund in some instances.
In some instances, but also typically what it looks like, so it would be called a guarantee period, and it basically means that if, that person doesn't work out, we'll find you another one.
Or get your money back?
At some point.
So look at the contract. Yeah.
So the first point would be, look, can we find you somebody else who could do the job really well in a reasonable time frame? If we absolutely can't, then some sort of credit or refund would be typically applicable.
Sweet. So that's kind of setting the scene on a recruiter.
Yeah. Okay. But at the end of the day, I definitely want to reiterate that the candidate is king or queen in our world, because that is their product.
Yes.
And we need that to be quality, and it's all about relationships. But also, typically, if somebody's a candidate and they get a great job, or they have a really great experience with us, even if they don't get a job through us, they might become now or in the future a decision maker in a business, and it's full circle.
Yeah. Mm. And actually, I didn't actually think of this until just then. I will talk about the benefits of a recruiter from my point of view. When I moved and started my career in finance, I came from a trade. I didn't know anyone in that world.
Mm.
So I went to a recruiter who specialized in financial services. Now, what that recruiter, I guess, does, they can actually do the basic admin skills, maybe some psychology testing or whatever, just to get a bit of a profile. And they can say, look, we've got three jobs here in a mortgage broking firm, financial planning firm. Your personality probably doesn't fit that role, but we can introduce you to this person. So they're a good job broker for me in a world that I didn't understand. And the cool thing was, they're always talking to businesses. I went down for an interview for a job at the recruiter, and then I got there and they said, look, we are really sorry. 15 minutes ago, the job we were going to place you and put you forward to, it's fallen through. In some weird freak of nature, we've also just got an email that one we placed last week has fallen through, and we think you'd be perfect for.
Yep.
So it's just, you're in that world, and that was the job.
Yeah.
That I did all my training with.
Yeah.
And it was a miracle. Like, it was crazy.
Absolutely. And my point is absolutely not that we don't care about you. It's just simply managing those expectations that you can't rely on a recruitment consultancy as a guaranteed job. You just want to use that as one of your little tools in your toolkit when you're searching for a job. And they know about jobs that are available that are not advertised. They also know about the market. So I hope your experience, Glenn, allowed you to get some insights into maybe how to make the transition, what was happening in the market. And even if they don't have anything right away, your story's not unique in that all sorts of things happen all the time.
It's like, it's an ecosystem. And when all things are working properly, it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess my other question is, Should somebody reach out to a recruiter if they are maybe looking for something else?
Definitely. So it's confidential completely. And even in our business, if you're coming into our office or you're meeting with us, we make sure that that's confidential, and we're really sensitive to that. So, we're not going to... I can't promise this on behalf of the whole industry, but best practice is not to talk about you or send your details to an employer or talk to an employer about you unless we've got your permission. So if you're starting to think, look, I might like to look at what's out there, or you're really active and it's a very obvious thing that you're doing, I'd absolutely recommend you do, because you just never know what value you might get out of it. And it's part of that ecosystem. It's part of that networking. Mm. And we have relationships with candidates, as I say, where they go full circle. One day they're a client and then years later they're a candidate. But also we have many candidates who we've built relationships with where we place them time and time again throughout their whole career into a new role.
Yeah. And I would think, Emily, as using a recruiter, that you would more often than not get a better outcome, because you know the culture of the company that you're dealing with, and you know the individual's personality. Obviously, the resume has been given, but that's just the qualifications and a bit of fluff. But yeah, essentially, you can gel the two together, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say similar. That's where there's a similarity to a mortgage broker, in that we will look at what is best for both parties involved, make that match.
And it could be simple. Like, I was remembering the other day, my mum used to say growing up, oh, they're rough as guts, for example. Like, if they're talking about someone, you know, a bit rough around the edges, you might have somebody who's a bit rough, then you're just not going to put them forward and waste their time applying for that position. But this position here could be perfect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I think there's lots of benefits for this ecosystem. And I will say, I just thought of a really cool reason why you might use a recruiter.
Why is that?
If you're relocating interstate and it's same industry and you might not have the connections, it could be a, hey, I want to move over to the East Coast or the West Coast. Could happen within the next 6 months if you see anything that pops up. So, and it could just, you could hit the ground running.
Yeah.
Totally.
Because that's what you want. Like, you want to always, if you are relocating, you want to land and hit the ground running.
Mm.
You don't want to relocate and go, I hope I get a job. Like,
yeah.
So it could be a good tool in that regard.
Yeah. And look, generalization is a comment that I'm about to make, but I think that sometimes you can build a relationship with a recruiter where if you're not in the same state or the same city, they can better represent you, as opposed to if you just chucked your hat in the ring on Seek and you're in a pile of resumes, you just feel a little bit harder because you're further away than the person that lives around the block. And so unless you have some sort of unique skill set to make you worth the wait, worth the trouble, worth the effort, you're at risk, higher risk, because it's all risk management, of an employer overlooking you for somebody closer. Whether they should or not, unfortunately, that's it happens.
So I guess, and this wasn't even in my list of questions to ask you, but we'll go there. We have no idea who's listening to these podcasts.
Mm.
There is a high chance that someone's listening who is in a role who hires talent for the business.
Mm.
There is an argument to outsource that filtering into somebody like yourself, a recruiter, right?
Absolutely.
Like, sure, there's a fee involved, but it's that cost benefit and outsourcing the admin time that you would take to a high protein recruitment agency like
yeah,
the one you're with.
Yeah, look, I think there's an admin benefit in the sense that we'll do that work. So if they're too busy, we're an extra pair of hands, but I think there's also an expertise benefit. So us having that really in-depth understanding of the candidate market, of candidates, of what's available, we can actually offer that advice back towards the employer as well and help them craft the role and design the role and find that person for them.
Do they see you as... are they intimidated by you, or are they happy to work alongside you? How does it usually
work?
What
if there's an internal HR department?
Yeah.
So I would say that most of the time they're really happy to work with us. And like any service industry, you do your best to work with clients that value you.
Yeah.
So I think if they don't value the work that we do, then they won't pay.
You sack them anyway. Yeah.
Fire your clients.
Yeah.
Look, yeah, I think we do a pretty good job at working with clients that do value what we do. There are a lot of internal recruiters and internal HR people who have come from agency and moved over to client side. So then it becomes are they spread too thin and they just need that extra support?
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, look, I think you could go on and on, but for the majority, like any industry, it's a really good relationship.
Mm. Yeah, good. So, Emily, what would you say is the single most important thing when it comes to looking for a job?
Okay, single most important thing.
One.
Yeah, the one thing. Look, I would suggest something that if you have nothing else will see you be successful is something I like to call career self-reliance. Have you guys heard the term career self-reliance before?
Nope.
Not
getting
officially.
Getting shakes of the head. Okay, well, consider it official. Basically, career self-reliance, my definition of that is being very reliant on yourself and being very active in your own career management. But what I would say is important to note is that that's not just when you're looking for a job. That's actually, this is infinite. So this is an infinite game that you are always playing in order to remain relevant and employable. And whether that's while you're in a role, as I say, or that's while you're looking for a job, setting yourself up for success when you're so that when you're ready, you're actually very attractive to the next employer.
So one word that springs to mind when you say that is initiative. Is that something that you look at as a really important point?
Absolutely. And that can simply be upkeeping your skills. Yep. It can be maintaining that, I guess, learner within you, whether it's formally or informally, or it can be volunteering on a board, volunteering to develop your skills. I mean, I think about Photogate, if I can refer back to what happened in Melbourne. And
Oh, my goodness.
And I, you know, I've absolutely got my opinion on that. But if you are building your career, whether you're early in your career or during your career, just knowing that it's on you and avoiding silver platter syndrome. No one is going to come and hand you anything on a silver platter.
Like you would meet with hundreds of candidates throughout the year, right?
Yeah.
Now, it's so important. We talk about mindset a lot on this podcast, do we?
Yeah,
no, we do.
I think organically we do.
Yeah.
I mean, the subtle undertones, right? You've got to have the view that the world isn't out to get you.
You're
not a victim. You know, I'm going out on a limb. If you're listening to this podcast, I don't care if you're in London, Paris, Minnesota, Melbourne. Like, the fact that you're listening to this, you're probably in the top 10% in the world. So,
and I'd say you'd have a reasonable mindset too, because
I mean, it's just like we already have so much opportunity from where you were born into. So if you want to get philosophical, the fact that you're listening to this podcast, you've got more opportunity than most of the people on the planet. So to transfer or translate that into when you're going to see the recruiter or the employer for when it gets to that interview, how are you conducting? Are you walking in expecting to have this sense of entitlement? Or are you like, hey, I'm here, how can I add value? Like, that's kind of the vibe. And you would, as much as the employer may make the final decision, if you present them three people to interview, you might have talked to four people or five people to shortlist them. Now, if they're not carrying themselves with a good attitude, even though they're highly skilled, they might not even make your shortlist.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think that these days, a lot of people, you're right, everybody that's listening to this podcast is probably starting on a pretty good wicket just in life. But also, there are many people out there that have a university degree. There are many people out there that have experience in their trade, in inverted commas. So what else are you doing to make yourself competitive and relevant?
Education, if it's binarily like yes or no, that's now hygiene for some roles, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think everyone starts on a level playing field. And if you're going in with the attitude of there's always someone out there better than me, then you're always in a position where you should be trying to improve yourself.
And just creating choices for yourself too. So something that recruiters will do, just to use them as an example again, but also employers directly more and more, particularly the big guys, is they will come and tap you on the shoulder on LinkedIn or on Seek Talent Search, which make it's removed so many barriers. So you want to look attractive.
Yeah, question. You're a you as in you out there listening. You're an employee of a company or whatever. How important do you think it is to have your LinkedIn profile active? More important if you are looking to enhance your career or just use it as a live resume? What's your view on LinkedIn for the average punter?
Must have. Yep. Yeah. And keep it up to date. And this is not just about what you want right now. This is about setting yourself up for the future as well and giving yourself options. So again, these days, it's not simply you see a job advertised, you use your resume to apply for that job, you may or may not get that job. There's so much more to it, and LinkedIn is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
You have to have some hard conversations with clients that aren't willing to change the way they're approaching things?
I think we have to have conversations with them. It's unusual for it to get hard,
yeah.
because usually what we do is work really, we always work really consultatively. And so usually what we'll do is right from the get-go be talking to them about what is your unicorn, what is the ultimate wish list, but then also can we work backwards from that? Mm. Where are the compromise points? And the same goes for an individual looking for a job.
Mm.
What is the dream? But then what is the work backwards from there? Whether it's because you're looking at what steps can you take incrementally to get to the dream job, or because you're looking for a unicorn job and yeah. we just need to adjust expectations.
It might not be a hard conversation for you, but it might be hard for them to hear that
yeah.
they're lazy as hell and they're not prepared to do the extra bit.
Possibly. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Now, okay, so the single most important thing is the career self-reliance. So
absolutely.
You're actively out there doing courses, which is in your career and in your world that you haven't been asked to do.
Yep.
You're doing it because you're interested and you're engaged.
Yeah, or it might not be courses, it might be volunteering, it might be board positions, sure. quite inexpensive stuff.
Are you sick of living week to week, or perhaps not having any money saved, or even stressing out when rego comes around? It might feel that your life just goes round and round and round because your money's going round and round and round. I've got a solution. We can change your life within a matter of weeks. It's the Glenn James Spending Plan. People who have completed this course have paid off credit card debt, have money saved, feel more free than ever before, and this will happen within the first couple of pay cycles. So follow the link in the show notes wherever you listen to this podcast, use the promo code, and change your life like hundreds of My Millennial Money listeners have done so already. I look forward to seeing you in the course and helping you really sort your money out. Hey, just a reminder, we run two other podcasts, My Millennial Money Property. It's about property, that's all. And if you're under 23 years old, Gen Z Money, it's for you. Check them out now wherever you're listening to this podcast. What makes a good resume? And then I guess it's like, what's the point of a cover letter? Like, should someone be focusing on the cover letter as the hook or the resume? What's your vibe on that?
Sure. So I think they're both really important, and you'll still see sometimes that a cover letter is requested. What I would suggest though is that they're for two different things. So a resume is much more clinical and much more objective. It's an opportunity to demonstrate the responsibilities that you've had and the achievements that you've had in your career, usually in a chronological order under each role, whereas your cover letter, and can I recommend no more than one page, is an opportunity.
Who's doing a cover letter more than one page?
Oh, they go well over.
Doesn't cover clear enough in its description?
Well, I know, cover letter, yeah. And hot tip, white space is your friend for both cover yeah. letters and resumes. The more white space, the better. So a cover letter is an opportunity to tell a little bit more of a narrative. So for example, if you are relocating or you are looking to change careers, it's that opportunity to try and hook the reader on your story and add some value in, I guess, a little bit more of an emotive way. So when I say that, I absolutely don't mean to get too sort of feelings based, yeah. but certainly you've got that opportunity to tell a story that you can't do in your resume.
You know, the best thing I saw was, and I guess it's different, and it's that dance between over the top, but like if you're a graphic designer, do like an infographic as your
yeah.
resume and cool stuff like
that.
Be
more personality.
Yeah, or I was applying for an award a couple of years ago, and on the application, I did the formal application, but at the top I said, please go to www.glennjames.com/award or whatever, and I yeah. gave them a password, and then it was a dedicated website to the award where there's a video on there, and really got creative because, again, you want to stand out.
You do, but you also want to make it easy for your reader.
Exactly.
So I would also just point out that a couple of things. Unfortunately, I'm probably not going to spend more than, they say six, so we'll say on average 6 seconds. 6 seconds looking at your resume on first glance.
Yeah.
And you need to grab me with the relevance and making it really easy to read and tailor it to me as the audience, not to yourself as the writer, and have me be hooked in order for me to spend any more time than that. Because my first look is, are you going in the no pile or are you going in the maybe pile?
Because yeah. You get so many of them.
That's exactly yeah. right.
What's the biggest issue when you see a resume that just keeps coming up other than typos?
What do you mean when you say a resume that just keeps coming up?
Like, as in you see the same mistake.
Biggest problem.
Over again.
So.
Too many jobs?
Yeah, look, too many jobs is up there, but it's got to be, it's hard for me to split between either length. So if you've got a contents page on your resume, you've gone so far past.
Are you serious?
Yes. Wow. So try and keep it 3 pages. If you're in your 20s, I might give you a 4th page if you're moving sort of into your 30s or 40.
Yeah.
But also writing it for yourself rather than your reader. So people often, they'll be 30 years old, they'll have a really wonderful level of experience that they're demonstrating, great achievements. They may have completed some sort of education beyond a HSC, but they're still holding on to their HSC, or they're still holding on to some sporting achievement from when they were 12. Let it go.
It's important to them.
It is important to them, but that's not, I don't care. It's not important to us in the context of looking at your resume for this job.
Yeah. And would you say, like, if you are over 30 and you've had 10 jobs, just list the most recent 4, and if there's other 10 plus others between 2000 and X or whatever.
Yeah, like, so definitely summarize. So yeah. I typically say go back about 10 years and then beyond that, or further away than that, it's just a summary to show continuity of working history, to show that you didn't start working late 20s. You actually were doing something from earlier than that, but certainly summarize.
If someone was fired from a job, one, you're not probably going to give that role as a referee, and I'll get onto that. But I think it's funny on LinkedIn, I'm like, what's your, I'm exploring opportunities.
Basically means you got sacked and you're trying to find something.
Looking for other opportunities.
So when you, like, back in the day, I was running a franchise company and was recruiting franchisees or new franchise trainers coming into the business. I would rarely look at their referees. I used to go a lot on gut feel and experience and those sort of things. Obviously, we need referees. Rarely do referees have a bad word to say about the person if they're,
I've had a
if
few,
they're smart
but
enough. But
it's not often.
Yeah, so who do you prioritise as putting on there?
So referees, in some respects, I can see that they could be considered a bit of an old school thing to include in a recruitment process, but they are one of the only ways for us to third party verify or corroborate what you're telling us. So they are still relevant. What you would most likely want to achieve with your referees is the ability for the recruiter or the employer to be able to talk to someone who, yes, absolutely will say nice things about you, but also can speak well just in general. So one of the most difficult things I find is if I call to do a reference check and the person on the other end is a poor communicator, it's not doing you any favors. Similarly, if they don't know your work and they can't speak to your work intimately, it doesn't do you any favors. And this is a, I'd like to, if I can, just pause on this for 1 second, because it's actually really critical to have good referees in the sense that often they're the final hurdle. So if it's getting close to it being down to you and one other person, scarily, it can actually be based on your referees, not you, whether or not you get that job. So you need them to be working for you.
Yeah, because it's, and it might be, we can't get this reference down.
Yep.
You won't get back to us. So we have to go with.
Yeah, nightmare. Do you get a heap of that?
We do. So few tips for referees, make sure that you prep them to know, look, I went to this interview, here's the role, here's what they were saying, expect a call in the next day. Is that going to be okay? Should I let them know any particular, let the employer or the recruiter know any particular availability? But also, they were hammering me on teamwork in the interview, or there seems to be this really consistent theme
about theft and theft in the workplace.
Yeah.
Fraud.
So, you know, please be ready to talk about my experience in that space. And hey, remember this really cool thing I did? Maybe if you were to mention that, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that would be awesome for me.
The funny thing is, on my resume, I just put like referees upon request.
Yes, so good. Do that.
At least
have you got a resume?
Yeah, man.
And what do you do with that thing?
Well, you know, you never know. I actually had, I paid someone $300 ages ago to write my resume for me.
Was that worthwhile investment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
because someone can speak about you better than you can speak about yourself.
Well, it also removes, you have that person if you need it to say let go of the fact that you won the 100 meter sprint in year nine.
Yeah, it's not important.
It's not important. But that's perfect. So don't put your referee details on your resume unless you're specifically asked to.
Because at least you just don't want someone getting a call out of the blue and put off guard.
Absolutely. And you also want that opportunity to prep them.
Yep.
The final thing I'll say is that if you get asked for your referees, have them ready to go so that you can send those details over quickly. But it's actually the best indicator that you're down to the last one or two.
You know, on my resume, front page, two short testimonies from other people.
Lovely.
Yep.
On your cover letter?
No, on the front page of the resume. On the front
page. Yep.
Add bullet points with key skills. You know, what I'm ready to do, you know, and a couple of testimonies. Oh, by the way, I have those jobs. Like you'd almost in the door by the time they're reading you worked at that job two years ago.
Well, I really like achievements ahead of responsibilities under each role for similar reasons. It's like, that's lovely that you've done those tasks. That's helpful for me to know. But what did you achieve is so much more powerful.
So I often get asked to be a referee for different individuals, but rarely, and I'd say maybe 3 times out of 10, I would actually get called. Is that because they didn't make the final cut or the employer couldn't be bothered ringing referees?
So I would say more the former. Usually we will only call referees if you're the last one person, we are our preferred candidate and we just want to do that final due diligence check, or we're down to two and we're splitting hairs and we're trying to work out who gets the job.
So I also get asked to do reference checks all the time and I actually hate doing them.
They're hard.
Well, so basically I had one just the other week. Anyway, this recruiter or somebody emailed me. They said, hey, we need you to complete the attached document, fill it out and send it back to us.
Mm.
It was like 12 questions on this guy who...
No way I'd be doing that.
No, I forwarded it to the guy. Yeah. Like, hey, bro, got this, fill this out, send it back to me and I'll send it on. So didn't even read it.
Did that
That's
guy...
That's just lazy from them.
Yeah, did that ex-employee of yours, did they give you the heads up that was coming?
No, and that was a problem as
well. Yeah.
So I had the poos because I didn't know it was coming, number one.
Mm.
And number two... I don't have time to fill out 12 questions on someone I employed 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And asking your referee to be your referee once 2 years ago or 5 years ago or even 6 months ago is not going to serve you well.
Yeah, it's got to be relevant.
Maintain that relationship. Yeah,
yeah. So he did his own reference check because I don't care. I mean, and then other ones I've been like, other ones I've just been like, hey, yeah, absolutely. Everything you say, it's all good. No issues here. Yeah. Gotta go. Yeah.
Okay, so if you ever work for Glenn, don't ask him to be your referee.
Yeah, basically.
Well, no, I would have thought that a lot of people spend about that much energy on it because...
Okay, I would spend more energy, John, if they were a horrendous person and I didn't think they deserved...
And I've been straight down line with a lot of them as well.
So absolutely. Because
I didn't think there was such a thing as a bad referee. But there can be if someone's that ignorant that
If they're caught up in their own world and they don't
that
think
they were useless at their job and they ended up leaving. Yeah.
So if that person asked you to be their referee, would you say yes or no?
I would say yes.
I would say yes.
And then not be a good ref and then give them a bad reference.
I just give them constructive feedback, which I've done.
Yep.
This person's great, has high energy, but sucks at this.
Yep.
Never been on time a day in their life.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So know what you're getting yourself into. That's fair.
And they still might employ them based on that.
Yes.
I haven't had any train wreck employees though because I start well.
You hire guys. Well.
Yeah. Hire well.
Yeah. Good.
Preparation's power.
Giddy up. All right. Let's move on. I've got some other questions. Interviews. Like... How scared should people actually be when they go to an interview, one, with you as a recruiter or your other colleagues in your profession, or two, to the actual interview?
My belief is don't be scared at all. A little bit of nerves is good in life, means you care. But from a fear point of view, there's nothing to be scared of. Now, the trick is, remember, not everybody is comfortable interviewing, or being the interviewer rather, to be clearer. So you might actually be walking into the room with somebody sitting on the other side of the table who's more nervous than you. And that can, it can make life hard when you have got somebody that's not a skilled interviewer. So if you're meeting with somebody who works in HR or recruitment, typically they're probably going to be a more skilled interviewer, and there is a skill to it. But anyone in that room could be nervous. The way I look at it is, it's a couple of people having a couple of adults having a conversation, trying to solve each other's problems. So when you're walking in that room, that employer or that recruiter is actually wanting you to succeed. They're wanting you to be awesome. They're wanting you to solve their problem. They're not setting you up to fail.
Yeah. And I think if there's some kind of nervousness, it means you care about that as well. Like if you're not, there might be a little concern.
Absolutely. So I think a little bit of nerves is good. Fear, push it aside as best you can and just go in and have a chat with that person that wants you to be great.
I've got some advice. Just between friends. I always tell people, when you're going to the interview, flip it. Start interviewing them.
Ask them questions.
And but in all sincerity, you want to know what you're walking into. Yeah. Hey, what's the vibe like here? What do you guys, how's the workplace culture? Like, does everyone check out at 5 p.m. or are people happily wanting to finish a task and they'll walk out
at 5:20?
And that's that initiative thing, Emily, isn't it, that we're talking about? Yeah. So,
and that's why I say very deliberately, it's a conversation.
Yeah.
It's not a question and answer. It's a conversation, and ask your questions as well.
And I would say, sorry, I'm standing up just because I want to. I would say, if we step back further, if your own personal financial life is in order and you're not riddled, is it riddled or riddled?
Riddled, I think.
If you're not riddled with debt and there's no financial stress and you do need to make a career change, or you haven't been fired and you do have your emergency fund, if you're not desperate, you come across as a better person anyway.
Yes.
Nothing worse than a desperate salesperson. I dare say there's probably nothing desperate than a desperate candidate.
And we know. We know from your resume. We know from your cover letter. We know from a phone call we've had with you. And we know when you walk in the door.
Yeah. Yeah. Chill out. And it's funny. When I got my job with the company that I did all my training with in finance, I had jobs. Like, I had 4 interviews at Macquarie Bank. Didn't get the role.
Mm.
I had interviews with other firms. Didn't get it. I was ready to go back to my trade.
Mm.
So at the end of it, I was over it.
Mm.
Went to the interview. I was late, number one, to the first interview. Number two, halfway through the interview, she's like, "You seem really relaxed."
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I didn't care anymore.
Yeah.
And so it was just weird that I was so relaxed, because my life now wasn't hinged or
on that one interview,
off this one interview, because I'm just like, look, I'll just go in, I'm just going to chat to these people.
Yeah.
Do you think as well more of your true personality would have come out?
I think so, because, and this is like with this podcast stuff, you get a better version of me if it's not prepared, because I can feel it and
vibe with it. It's like turning up in tracksuit pants.
Yeah. Who would do that?
So to an interview.
You're getting a better natural version of oneself.
So we're looking at a slob right now, are we?
All right. So this next question, years ago, right now, maybe 15-ish, I moved interstate and I wanted some sort of employment for a 6-month, 12-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And I applied for this aquatic center management role, right? So to me, it was basically the highest role within the gym setup, aquatic center, et cetera. And went through the interview process, third stage, down to the last two. Okay, we'd like to offer you the position.
Mm.
Now, not at any stage along the way had I asked, well, what's the income or salary?
Sure.
And it wasn't until they emailed me the position that I saw the amount.
Yeah. And did you do that deliberately, not ask,
And I did do it deliberately, you're right, because I was always told, it's not about the money and the money will come and all those sort of things, right? But in hindsight, I was like, geez, this pays crappy for what I think I need in my life but also deserve from the relevant experience that I've had up until then. So they've wasted their time and I've wasted my time. I've walked away from that position saying, look, this isn't going to be suitable. We should have had some transparency early on.
Did you have room there to go back and talk through the offer?
Correct. So I went back and said, look, is there any wiggle room on this?
Yep.
And they changed it by $2,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, they were, without sounding arrogant, they were 20 grand short.
Sure. Yep.
But that was my fault, I think, because early on I should have said, look, Circa, what are you talking here for this position?
Look, it's an interesting one. I think there are intricacies to it. I would suggest that to raise money through a recruitment process, if I'm sitting in my recruiter seat or my employer seat, that's a turnoff. And maybe that means that by the end of it, you might end up with a story like yours, John, and you feel like, well, we've wasted everybody's time.
Yeah.
That's just one of those risks of a recruitment process. Usually you should find that recruiter or that employer will bring it up earlier, but that's not always going to happen. What I would suggest is absolutely take their lead. I think if you come out of the gates too early talking about money, unfortunately, you're just at risk of being perceived. Desperate, or like you don't care about anything else.
And the whole thing
else.
Is like, and a lot of jobs won't, like if they're advertising on Seek or whatever, they won't put the salary because other workers could see, and it is probably some commercial sensitivities there. But I would imagine if you're back for a second interview, you could then be like, okay, so what does it look like in terms of remuneration?
The best way to handle a conversation, particularly if you're going to raise it, or the best timing, is when you've got a certain level of power.
Yeah.
When you've got power is when they want you.
Yeah. And on that power thing, I was just about to do a segue to this. Rance Clark asks, I've been offered a new job, but I have holidays planned and now I have annual leave. Should I still ask for time off? So the most powerful time in your career position or job position is before you get hired because they want you, but you're not engaged yet. So you've got that dance, right?
So, and if I can make a link for you, you have one of the only indicators, unless they tell you in a recruitment process that they want you, is that they're doing your reference checks.
Yes.
Because they're likely only going to do that if you are the preferred candidate or you're one of two. So that starts to give you a bit of an indication, and that's why you don't put your referees on your resume, so that they have to ask you for them so that you know.
Yeah, so just
final hurdle.
The wording on my one is referees or references upon request.
Exactly.
Now, so Rance, I would say, and I'll just make a date up, so you've got holidays planned. Just tell them, hey, really keen. But I've already got time booked in.
Yeah, if you can work around me, that'd be nice.
Well, basically, but I need 2 weeks off at this date. I'm happy to take leave without pay or bring forward leave, but I can't change this commitment.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I would say it's after the offer and before you've turned up on day one, before you've signed a piece of paper and turned up on day one, because that starts to become a little bit too dishonest. But also, I would like to hope that employers look at this as a long-term investment, and a two-week holiday, no big deal if you're going to stay here for 5 years.
Yeah. And then also, on that, if you are changing jobs or careers, give yourself a week off. If you got your money situation sorted, if you want to give your notice, you got 2 weeks notice, tell them you can't start for a month. Just give yourself 2 weeks off just to chill. And
I call that fun employment, because you're unemployed, but you know you've got a job secure.
Exactly, exactly. So why not? So don't just do things like, oh, my last day works on that Friday and the next Monday I'll start my job. Just give yourself a week or two.
Totally.
Like, you've got the power, you've got the control, and you'll be able to be refreshed, ready for the new role.
You'll be better you.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So yeah, Rance, go for it. So millennials, so basically anyone under 35, what are the hurdles that they're facing in job searches at the moment?
Look, I think there's probably two main ones that are important to keep in mind. One of them is the wrath of social media. So I think everybody's probably heard this one before. It's absolutely sort your professional social presence. Google yourself. Check out your LinkedIn, maintain it, keep it up to date, know what is out there,
lock down your Facebook profile.
Yep. So gussy up your LinkedIn profile, lock down your Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all of those things, and do a quick Google search and check what comes up. You might get a surprise.
Yep.
And also in Google search, Google your name and then click images.
Yes. That's and scroll down about halfway and you'll find yourself somewhere. Yeah.
So that's probably
hopefully
the
with clothes
biggest.
On.
Yes, hopefully.
So that would probably be the biggest hurdle, the online footprint.
Yeah. So that's one of them. The other one I would put out there, and I don't know if this is about to be a bit controversial. You guys can settle me down if it is. There is absolutely an identifiable, and it's a bit of a stereotype, but stereotypes come from somewhere, an identifiable characteristic of us millennials that we have high expectations and overconfidence, and I see that. And so I think this comes back to whether you're changing careers, you're starting careers, you're in your career, just temper.
Chill out.
Chill. Look at it as you don't need to be an overnight success. Maybe you're not worth what you think you are, and just one step at a time.
I reckon, like, if you employ people out there and someone's bitching and moaning, I was like, oh, I can get more money elsewhere, just tell them,
see ya.
Go do it.
Yeah.
Dare ya.
That's right.
Yeah. Be humble, a little bit of humility.
And I think if they've got that confidence, and call it ego if you want, because they have runs on the board and they have got superior qualifications or whatever it may be, then so be it.
Yeah, but let it talk for itself
and for
channel
sure.
that confidence in a really nice self-confidence way, not
and
an egotistical way.
I think that's the issue that a lot of employers might have is the way it comes across.
Yeah, absolutely. Lack of patience. So just be patient.
It's a bit of a...
This is a good one. Laura Adams on Instagram, how to stand out as a uni grad when applying for jobs. Well,
yes, love this one.
Yeah, this is great. If I can jump in first, my advice would be if you're doing a degree in papermaking, I don't know. What's a degree? Okay, I'll rephrase that. If you're doing a degree in marketing, can you go and intern one day a week somewhere for free? Can you go and volunteer? Because if I've got a candidate, both of them have marketing degrees, that's hygiene. The one who has had 2 ounces of experience, I'm going to prefer possibly over someone without experience. That would be my... layman's term way, you need to just get out there and get involved in the field that you are interested in, whether it's volunteer or internship.
Yeah.
What would you say to new grads?
Totally agree. How else are you using those hours? So something that, I mean, you've got 3, 4, 5 years while you're at university and absolutely you'll walk out of there with a piece of paper. But I totally agree with you. That's hygiene, particularly if we are talking about a uni grad, because you are going to be competing against other uni grads. So what else will make you stand out? When I went through my undergrad degree, I got an admin job in an engineering business.
Yep.
So it meant I learned how to answer the phone politely and how a business runs. And some of the stories I've got as far as what I had to do, my boss sent me out to chase his dogs down the street at one point, and there were council workers and all sorts of things going on. But the amount that I learnt after 3.5 years put me well ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I think in general there's 168 hours in the week, and we're present at university for maybe 10 to 12 of those at maximum, I would have thought. So there's plenty of time to add value and get out there. And I would encourage volunteering first and foremost, because if you're doing the job and you're putting in the hours, then they'll start to pay you anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even for me, I did a bit of volunteering at the same time, and that was more of a charitable thing, but it meant that I used my admin skills and I got to see the inside of a different business. So all of a sudden I'm collecting insights into what it's like in different offices.
Yeah.
So then when I start to interview and have those conversations around a graduate job, I've got a better sense for what I enjoy. I've got a better sense for the type of environment I want to work in.
Yep.
It's really valuable.
And I would say most uni grads or most grads, like think outside the square. Like if you are under 30 and you are going for a job, Google them, look at their website and go in and say, hey, love to work for you. I don't have experience, but I am keen to get involved. can I get the social media happening?
Mm.
Because it looks like crap at the moment. Mm. So can you stand out by doing something like that?
Mm. Or if you do say if you've got somebody who's creative, work on your own social media presence so that you've got a bit of a portfolio when you turn up to apply for the graphic design job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. And the question was how to stand out. You've got to stand out.
Do more.
People got to know you exist.
Yeah,
totally. What else are you doing?
Like send your resume in, I don't know, taped to a box of donuts. Mm. I don't know. Stand out. Mm. Be that one where they go, you are the one who sent the donuts in. That's with right. The resume.
Mm. Yeah.
Stand out. Just go above and beyond.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is that across the board, only 20% of jobs are advertised, and that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're late in your career, early in your career. There's only 20% of jobs advertised. So what else are you doing to go and open up opportunities? And that job opportunity might never have been advertised, but if you are networking in whatever way, shape or form that looks like, there'll be something there for
join
you.
Join the so in Newcastle, your area, there's Hunter Young Professionals.
Yes.
Like it's a cool little vibe thing. Yep. Just get connected.
Yeah. And universities have, for example, because I know about Newcastle, University of Newcastle has a BizCom society, but they also have many other societies across other disciplines, and so would other universities.
Yeah.
I would go as far to say that as a uni grad, if you shouldn't have to apply to for a position because you've done enough work in that 4 or 5 years to walk straight into a position or be offered one because of the legwork that you've done in that time.
Totally possible, but you have to do the work.
Correct. Yeah.
Josie_Mind asks on Instagram, advice to give to somebody who is looking at changing their careers in their late 20s, good or bad advice? John, do what you love. Next question.
Yeah, it's 10 years versus 40.
Yeah, look, don't waste another minute doing something you hate.
Yeah.
Get out there and change.
Yeah, totally. And the first step could be going to see a recruiter and saying, hey, I'm in marketing. I think I like the outdoors. Can I use this marketing skill with the National Parks and Wildlife? Do you know anyone? I'm making stuff up on the spot here, but can you use your skill in a different industry that gives you passion? Just because you're in marketing and HR, just because you're in marketing and PR, what about, and you love wildlife, can't you go and work for a company that their focus is wildlife and use those skills? So just follow your dreams and passions.
Yep.
The Raw Page asks, and this one will be a good one for you, Emily. If you're not happy in your job but scared to get a new job because the grass might not be greener.
Very open question. So I think for me it's about risk management again. So what are the risks and what is in your control? How can you have a look at your situation and try and carve up what's making you not happy, and then what are the chances that that is going to still exist wherever you are or not?
And is the grass was always greener concept because of maybe the social media online pressure that people perceive that's out there?
Yeah, possibly. It could. I thought you might have been about to go to the expectations that are perhaps need to be tempered. You might not be able to earn the money that you want right now, but you could absolutely earn it down the track. And would your chances be higher if you stick at what you're doing and be patient? I don't know. But I think that it's about trying to work out, is this a situation that's relevant to me and so therefore I'm going to take it wherever I go, or is it a situation where it's more about what's around me? So if I go and use this opportunity to learn more about myself and the type of environment I'm best in, it's not a grass is greener situation. It's actually finding better alignment in a business or in a position where I'm happier.
Yeah, best version of you.
Yeah.
I would actually carve this up, Paige. You said you're not happy in your job. So let's actually work this out.
If she's not.
Yeah. Because she says if you're not happy in your job. Yeah. So Paige is not happy in a job, okay? Is it an internal or external factor that's not happy in a job?
Mm.
Does she hate the toxic work environment? Does she hate whinging customers? Is it a career thing? She's not passionate about that job anymore. So if it's a career thing, the job might be fine. She's just checked out and moved somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is it a job thing where the people suck and she hates the customers?
Mm.
What can you control? So we need to decide, first and foremost, this place sucks. I need to get out regardless. Or this place sucks because I'm not passionate about selling cleaning products anymore. The rest should take care of itself once you get really clear on what the underlying pain point is.
Yeah.
And I would even say to Paige, a clarity call with John might even help that as a sounding board.
So I think if you, as you mentioned, outline what the issues are, address them, and can they be fixed? So, because there's a problem that's here for a week and then it goes away.
That's right.
If I've still got that same issue in 6 months and I physically can't do anything about it, then it may be time to move on. But I think people maybe prematurely jump because they think there's something better out there.
And that's right. And if it's a problem, so I'll make up a dumb scenario. You're expected to go to the Friday afternoon drinks at 7 p.m. or you're just not part of the team. But at those drinks, everyone's having nose beers and getting high and being crazy, and that's not your vibe. Can you go to the management and say, hey, not vibing this part of the expectation, can this change?
Yeah.
And if they go, oh yeah, don't come, it's all good. Yeah. Oh, well, I suddenly love my work. I just don't like snorting cocaine
every
Friday night.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's just
that's a good example.
Yeah.
It's like, what can you control? So
yeah.
But absolutely. It's been a great chat. Now, Emily.
Solid.
Do you have any other, I guess, final little nuggets or tips from the recruiter's chair that you occupy?
Ooh. I think motherhood statement, I just come back to that career self-reliance. Don't expect anything to be handed to you on a silver platter. Always be thinking about what is in your control, what you can be doing, and have conversations. So I think you can apply that conversation piece to anything that we've talked about. Talk it out. If the person at the other side, whether they're a recruiter or an employer, doesn't come to the party in the conversation, they're probably not a place that you're going to be happy long term anyway. So definitely as you're working to secure a role or to find that next job, have conversations. It's also a great way, if you are looking for something, to do your research, have conversations with people that are in your network who might do that job. They might be family members. You might be asking them, what do you do? Can you tell me more about how my skills might apply? So it's that networking piece. The other one that I didn't mention that I was thinking about when we were talking about money is, so from a super point of view, this is probably a pretty micro tip, but be really mindful that when you're negotiating or you're talking about salary, do you know whether it's inclusive or exclusive of super?
Yeah, because get clarity on that.
Yeah, with my recruiter hat on, I know that there's been a few moments of misunderstanding and you get to the end of a process and that can make a significant difference.
And it's only ever a problem if it's super included.
That's right. But that's your money as well. So sometimes we get a bit of a vibe that people go, oh, that doesn't really count.
That's a 10% conversation, isn't it?
It absolutely counts.
Yeah,
totally. So probably motherhood and then a bit of a micro tip at the end too.
And preparation is power, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Now you're sitting here with five
Don't give away my
pages
secrets.
Of notes. There's three. And all these, this preparation's been sensational and it shows.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Emily Bowen from Forsyth Recruitment and HR.
Thank you, guys.
See you soon.
Bye.
If you are after personal financial advice, this podcast is not for you. In fact, it's a general advice podcast. But if you do want somebody to talk to, jump onto sortyourmoneyout.com and click on Get Help, and I'll be able to put you in touch with an advisor or a mortgage broker who can actually sit down with you or have a Skype or a Zoom meeting and really work out what you need based on your own personal circumstances.
My Millennial Money supports A21. A21 is a non-profit organization that exists to abolish slavery everywhere. These guys rescue real people from human trafficking across the world. If you want to learn more about how you can contribute to the fight against human trafficking, check out a21.org/au.
Remember, we hang out on Insta at My Millennial Money. If you're a regular listener, you're welcome to join our Facebook group. If you want more money hacks, be sure to subscribe to My Millennial Money Express. It's short money hacks anywhere, anytime, right into your ears. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature only and has not been tailored to your personal circumstances. Please seek personal advice prior to acting on this information. Before making a decision to acquire a financial product, you should obtain and read the product disclosure statement relating to that product. Opinions constitute our judgment at the time of issue and are subject to change. Neither the licensee, any of the National Australia Group of Companies, nor their employees or directors give any warranty of accuracy, nor accept any responsibility for errors or omissions in this podcast. Glenn James, Urban Gator Proprietary Limited, trading as Sort Your Money Out, are authorised representatives of Apogee Financial Planning Limited, AFSL 230689.
And for all of those who are long-time listeners of the show, like Emily, hello, Emily.
Hello again.
Sit down, shut up, and get back to work.
Yeah, look, talking before we came on air, she yes. knows more about the podcast than I do.
I know, she does.
Mm.
It's funny. So I've just got a bit of an issue, guys.
What is it?
Just got a bit of an issue, guys. You're at a restaurant, okay?
Mm.
There's four people. I've taken this social issue into my own hands and I'm becoming a hospitality trainer, okay? So there's four people eating and for argument's sake, or if there's three of us here eating, for argument's sake, and John was the slow eater.
Mm.
Now, Emily, we would finish eating, okay?
Yep.
Our plates would be cleared. John's halfway through because he's either a slow eater or he
talks a lot.
Talking. The wait staff come and take our plates.
Yep.
Not vibing that, and it's horrendous, and it's not good etiquette. So
you've talked about this before.
Have I?
Something similar.
Probably something similar.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Don't clear my plate.
Wait till my friends have eaten. So I'm at the point now when the wait staff come to take my plate. I'd just like to wait until... So I'm being polite, but mm-hmm. I'm trying to train the hospitality staff.
Yes.
So as the super fan I am,
yeah.
I feel like last time this was about you starting to eat, Glenn, before anyone else got their meal. Yes,
Emily, you've trumped me again.
I feel like this is the opposite.
Exactly.
And, like, I'm with you on the don't clear the plate.
Yes. Yeah.
But I'm also a don't start eating until everyone's got their meal.
Okay, couple of things. If it's hot... You can eat.
Yeah.
But also, I raise you. Yeah, I see your hand and I call your bluff. If you're at a class enough restaurant, they should bring them all out within 20 seconds of each other.
Oh, totally. Yeah. We shouldn't even have to solve this problem.
Exactly. But if you're down at the bloody bistro where John probably eats, schnitty chips and salad, and they're coming out left, right and centre, whatever, don't care.
Yeah, well, it's self-serve, so you're all eating together anyway.
Yeah, and I guess for me... You know, you've got to always in life put yourself in someone else's position. So, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I don't care if someone else eats.
Hmm. And the waiters don't care if your plate's gone.
No, and that's what I'm trying to correct. Mm.
It's not about you and your finished plate. It's just they've got to get things moving.
Yeah, that's right. But no, it's etiquette.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, I don't want you, if you're a slow eater, to feel bad.
No, 100%, I agree.
Mm. So, there we have it. I'm just trying to think what we will do now. What do I do?
Start with the first question.
Yeah, okay. So, are you guys ready to... So, we're going to... Because I want to change it. I just want to get straight into content because I'll put that banter at the back. And can you not wear just freaking daggy old clothes when you're here next? We've got guests here, John.
If this was a visual, we could say what not to wear to interview.
Yeah. Basically, the guy's in tracksuit. And you know he's rich. He's got trackies, but they're super dry ones.
Oh, yeah. Paid for the logo.
Anyway, sorry, I was just distracted.
What was this podcast about?
I don't know or care. I just got distracted. So sorry.
So yeah. I guess